3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name, as stated, is Sean Stout. I represent Jose De Leon Garcia in this appeal. I was also trial counsel below. Today we're here to determine whether, one, this is a hearsay statement, and two, whether it should have been admitted in a motion to suppress. A hearsay statement, as the Court knows, is something that was said out of court by another person and then admitted for the truth. So today we're here to talk about whether this is admitted for the truth, that there is some warrant. So we have...
Well, and doesn't it make a difference that it was offered during a suppression hearing?
I don't believe it does. A suppression hearing is an evidentiary hearing just like any other. The rules...
The Supreme Court of the United States has ruled, not granted based on the federal rules of evidence, that hearsay is admissible at suppression hearings. We, in an unpublished opinion, have suggested that we believe that to be the case, but we've never said it in a published opinion. Do you have any comment on the difference between Virginia and federal law in that regard?
Well, I don't believe that Virginia has specifically said that it is admissible, and I think that Virginia should find that hearsay is inadmissible because, again, it's an evidentiary hearing. There have to be some standards. In this case, you have a Virginia rule of evidence that applies to hearsay. There's been no exception carved out specifically in case law, nor in the rules of evidence, which are based on the prior common law case law regarding evidence, that say that across the board, hearsay gets admitted into a motion to suppress. The Supreme Court has taken it up, but this is not something that would be binding on the Virginia court as to how it applies its rule of evidence.
What is it that you're trying to suppress here?
That would be the other matter here, is whether there's something to suppress. Obviously, I would concede that the Commonwealth's correct, that the evidence of a new crime, there's clear case law that says that any criminal behavior would not be something that can be suppressed.
So assaulting the officer at that point,
correct,
is not suppressible.
The evidence of the assault, but the evidence of the identity of this person, the evidence...
Is identity ever suppressible? Because Judge Petty is very adamant that it's not.
Well, in this case, one of the evidence that comes into trial to help form this conviction is that this is a lawful arrest. That evidence of any sort of lawful arrest can't come in, or it should be suppressed. Testimony about what his ID is, that there was an active warrant for him.
Did you assert the affirmative defense that the arrest was unlawful?
I did not, but the court had already allowed basically testimony that this was a lawful arrest, warrant. There's a warrant, this is the person for whom there's a warrant, this is a lawful arrest. So the evidence that it was a lawful arrest should have been suppressed.
But even if there isn't a warrant, the arrest is still lawful as long as the officer has a reasonable belief that there is, correct?
Yes. If the officer has a reasonable suspicion that a crime was committed by the person there, then that gives the officer a chance to stop and investigate.
If I walk, not that anybody knows who I am, but if I walk out on King Street and start walking down the street, and somebody comes over dispatch and says there's an arrest warrant out for Judge Russell, and a police officer sees me and arrests me, doesn't matter whether the dispatch is true or false. Does the officer have reasonable articulable? Actually, does the officer have probable cause at that point to arrest me if he has reason to believe I'm Judge Russell?
Does it? Well, there's a couple of questions in there. Does he have probable cause that you are Judge Russell? And then I believe at that point the officer has a suspicion that there is a warrant for a Judge Russell. He potentially could ask you to come try and dispel that suspicion.
But if I'm told that a specific person, let's say I know who the person is, if I'm told that if another officer tells me there's an outstanding arrest warrant, or somebody comes over the radio and says there's an outstanding arrest warrant, or I pull somebody over and I run a records check and they say there's an outstanding arrest warrant, whether that report is true or false, as a reasonable officer, don't I have probable cause at that point to arrest the person? It's not that being offered for the truth of the matter asserted, it's being offered to show why the officer did what he did, effectuate an arrest.
Whether the officer can do that, I think that the officer certainly has a suspicion, again, based on the call that, say, Judge Russell, and the officer knows Judge Russell personally, he knows you, he can identify you from all of your various prior dealings, then the officer has more than a suspicion. So in this case, it's the things that come into whether that officer Colorado and then the officers that follow based on his call have probable cause to actually make an arrest. They attempted to stop and to ask questions, but then at that point it becomes a chase. They chase the person down and arrest him. So it's not reasonable suspicion. It's probable cause. There's an actual arrest is the first encounter with this person. I think it's touchy whether the officer has probable cause just based on the call that moment. But in the case here, it wasn't, a statement that was made just now. It was a statement that was made several days ago by an officer. And there was no information about how that officer had that information. So we have hearsay potentially within hearsay because you have the officer who tells Officer Colorado there's a warrant, and then he gets that information from we don't know where.
But at a motion to suppress hearing, isn't the relevant inquiry what a reasonable officer possessed with information from whatever sources he has? I mean, a victim of a crime tells me John Smith just assaulted me. The officer didn't see it. Well, definitionally that's hearsay. He then goes and arrests John Smith. John Smith moves to suppress. The issue is whether there was probable and drugs are found on John Smith. The question is, the search was conducted subsequent to the arrest. Isn't the issue whether the officer had a reasonable belief that he could arrest John Smith? It doesn't matter whether there was whether John Smith had actually committed the assault. It's not being offered for the truth that there is an arrest warrant. It explains the officer's conduct.
Well, in this case, a motion to suppress is about an officer. Like the question in that motion to suppress is whether the officer is entitled to do that.
But the question goes to this point, the nature of any arrest that a police officer engages in where he did not see the criminal activity himself is hearsay.
Yes.
All of it, it's hearsay. So as long as the information was legitimate and the officer reasonably relied on that information to effectuate the arrest is good.
That is tantamount to a rule that all hearsay evidence gets to come into a suppression hearing, whereas it...
But then again, gets my question, what are we trying to suppress?
Well, that's where we come back to. The evidence we were trying to suppress is testimony of the officer as to the actual existence of a warrant for this person. They didn't discover who this person was until they had engaged in the unlawful police behavior. They did not determine that there was...
What was the unlawful police behavior?
Was chasing this person down without an actual cause, without knowledge that he had committed some crime.
Well, and wait a minute. Stop police. He has reason to believe that the husband or live-in boyfriend, it's not clear, of the woman he sees and knows has assaulted her and has an outstanding warrant. He sees a man who he believes to be that person walking down the street with the woman, with the child that they have in common, carrying the child.
Well, the reason he believes him to be that is because he's walking with the woman and the child.
Well, that's a pretty good hint. I hope you can't find my wife walking around with another man carrying my daughter a whole lot.
Does your wife have a brother? In this case, this would allow this officer to basically arrest anyone who happened to be walking with that woman.
He said stop, so we're not at arrest yet, and then we have headlong flight. I mean, that's pretty significant for our probable cause to arrest determination, isn't it?
If you take out the unsubstantiated information about whether that there's a warrant or that the person had been non-compliant in serving that warrant, all you have is just a person, a Hispanic-looking person walking along with a woman. There's no further information about who that person is other than that he's just walking along with a woman and her child.
But when the officer testified to it at the suppression hearing, was it being offered that there was an actual warrant or that the officer believed there to be a warrant?
It has to be
the purpose that I believe there to be a warrant because this officer had told me there was a warrant.
Well, the officer testified that there was a warrant. The objection was testimony that there was a warrant for this person. The officer testified that there was a warrant, not I believed there was a warrant because
I had been told that there was a warrant outstanding for his arrest.
But he had been told by another officer.
I mean, if he just said there was a warrant outstanding for his arrest, there's no hearsay in that statement.
Exactly. Had the officer seen the warrant, testified that there is a warrant. I seen the warrant. Had the officer served the warrant? Had the officer been the person who swore out the warrant? Had the officer had some specific personal knowledge about the actual criminal activity as opposed to just knowing that another officer told him several days before that there was an outstanding warrant for the person? Essentially, the officer, they want to prove the thing. In the process of proving the thing, in a motion to suppress, we're determining whether the officer can do what he did. But they want to admit this evidence that he can do what he did because there's a warrant.
Well, but the issue isn't whether there actually was a warrant, is whether the officer reasonably believed, at the very least, and it's not clear that he ever arrested him on the warrant, he just stopped him to ask him a question, and then we have headlong flight.
Yes.
Stop, I want to ask you a question, gone. He certainly has reasonable, articulable suspicion that something's going on, doesn't he?
I would say that the officer at that point has suspicion. The headlong flight when he tells him to stop. So the officer makes two things. He asks him, please, and then when the person continues to walk, then he stops him. So the officer at least attempts to stop this person. That does not work. So we get past reasonable suspicion when the officer calls in, says there is a warrant, arrest this person. So they go to then arrest this person, which the officer has turned in whatever suspicion he just had, and then he calls it in as being probable cause. He's escalating this without any further information other than a person decided he did not want to engage in that officer encounter. A person who, if the officer doesn't know who this person is, he looks over, he sees a person walking, say, with Judge Russell's wife and child, sees this person and makes his assumption as to only Judge Russell would be walking with Judge Russell and Judge Russell's child, then Judge Russell decides not to talk to him. That's the total information that this officer has without actually knowing that you're you.
Well, the passing of the child back and forth, the conversation, the complaint of assault a couple of days earlier, the fact that domestic assaults, we expect different relationships between the parties after the assaults than we would for a common street fight, and then the headlong flight.
But that information, that other information about the things about domestic assault and all of that, that's the hearsay that comes from some outside source. I'm getting into rebuttal time, but again, that information is what is being used to stop this person. That information coming from a third party, they're trying to establish probable cause by saying that there's probable cause. Thank you.
Ms. Campbell? Ms. Campbell, let me ask you, Virginia Rule of Evidence 2:1101C provides, except as otherwise provided by statute or rule, adherence to the rules of evidence, other than with respect to privilege, is permissive, not mandatory, in the following situations. In subparagraph 1 is criminal proceedings other than trial, preliminary hearing, sentencing before jury, or capital murder sentencing hearings. Doesn't this statute apply to relax the rules regarding hearsay in a suppression hearing?
The Commonwealth will assert that the rules regarding hearsay should be relaxed in a motion to suppress, but even more importantly, when you simply look at why the Commonwealth was introducing this evidence, the Commonwealth said this evidence fell within, was not hearsay because it was not offered for the truth of the matter. As this court has discussed with the defendant, it was offered to explain the officer's knowledge and his impression at the time that he was attempting to stop the defendant. And to go back, to, the defendant's motion to suppress is on page 4 and 5 of the record. First, the argument does not actually address probable cause and argues only that the officer didn't have reasonable suspicion to stop the defendant, and the remedy that is requested is all evidence uncovered as a result of that detention must be suppressed. As I argued in my brief, there's no evidence to be suppressed as a result of the detention. It appears that the defendant's argument today is that he was making a hearsay objection to the testimony of the warrant, and that was also what he was attempting to suppress. But by his own motion, that's clearly not what he was moving to suppress. The Commonwealth would assert, again, the trial court properly admitted the evidence because it was not hearsay. It certainly did not abuse its discretion in admitting the evidence of the officer testifying to what another officer told him. The trial court did make him lay a foundation to who told him this. And second, the exclusionary rule would not apply to any evidence in this case simply because the defendant engaged in new criminal conduct. If the court has no further questions, the Commonwealth would rely on its brief and ask the court to affirm.
Very well, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Stout, same question. Why doesn't that rule, Virginia Rule of Evidence 2, 1101C, cover this situation?
It certainly applies to this situation. It's very clear. I would just say that statute or that rule is not terribly helpful when it tells us what permissive means. What is that? Does that mean everything gets in? Or do none of the rules of evidence now apply? Is all hearsay? The point is well taken that perhaps it should be relaxed, but I don't think that statute is particularly instructive as to what the court should do under this scenario.
Well, if you look at the definition of hearsay and when the hearsay rule is applicable, it says at hearing, which would also presumably includes trials and other things as well. So the rules may be murky.
Yes, the rules are certainly murky, Your Honors. And if there are no further questions, I believe that we've pretty thoroughly discussed this matter.
Very well. We'll step down and greet counsel and then take up the Giambasta case.